This is Amarin's.
Hello. Welcome to episode 29 of my podcast. It's Friday, July 27, 2007. Today's main topic is race, because to understand New Zealand, you really have to understand that it's a bicultural country within a multicultural society. So I'm going to talk a bit about that today, mostly from my perspective as an expat American, you know, what it looks like and what it feels like to me. To do that, I'm going to be going over some comments from the previous two episodes, because it gave me a bit of a springboard to talk about this. At the end of this episode, I have an announcement and a little bit of housekeeping. But first, today is the last day of Maori Language Week, which I talked about in the previous episode. So I thought I would give you what I should have done in the last episode, which is to give you a basic word or phrase in Te Reo Māori, and that is kia ora, which basically means hello. It's K-I-A, next word, O-R-A, and it's not kia ora, it's kia ora. Remember the vowels I talked about last time. And it's one of the most basic phrases there is in Te Reo Māori. If you were to ring the New Zealand Embassy in Washington, D.C., that's how they answer the phones, for instance. It's used on television, it's used on radio, it's used by telephonists. If you ring an office, that's generally how they'll answer the phone, or very often how they'll answer the phone. It is probably the most common phrase in the Māori language. Kia ora. So you've probably heard me say it from time to time on this podcast or on others, and I'll be using it again in future. So that's your Māori word or phrase for the week. Now, moving on to the comments, because I do want to go over them for this one. Now, this goes back to episode 27 with Nigel, which is two episodes ago. I already commented on the comments from Archer and John Q Public, so I won't go over those again. However, since then, I have gotten a comment from Dee, who is a fellow American expat living in Wellington, and I thought I would go over that. She writes, "Love this podcast. Once again, you two are completely adorable together." And for some comments. One, this is number one. "I knew I was straight around age 5 because I had a little boyfriend in my Catholic kindergarten class. We kissed every day when we went out for recess. The nuns didn't like that one bit. I also remember a strong urge to go over to his house for some private time, ... And I said, I'm going to go by these point by point. And I said, first of all, thanks, Dee. I like having Nigel on the podcast, and just quietly, I think he kind of likes it too. And to point one, I said, sounds like a racy story. Actually, I think a lot of little gay boys had similar stories, and some not so very different from yours. Because I've actually had some gay friends who talked about having little girlfriends when they were children. It's only later on that they had boyfriends. Okay, number two. Awesome to hear how accepting Nigel's family was when he came out. And as I write this, it's still so strange to me that gay people have to be accepted, in quotes, and that a family that does so is still a rarity. I hope for one day when it's not. And I said, yeah, it amazes me that people get all judgmental about their own families, but they do, which is why I so often say that for gay people, and for anyone else who's different from what families want, our families of choice, friends, are often more of a family in the real sense than our families by blood. Fortunately, in our case, our families by blood are awesome too, so we're fortunate. And I've known plenty of people who never speak to their families, their blood families anymore, because they've been disowned, or they've had a falling out, or their families won't accept them, or any number of reasons. It's primarily in America, but that I'm sure it happens here as well. I just frankly don't know as many gay people here as I did in America. But then there aren't as many people here as there are in America either, so. Anyway, she goes on, "I want to hear more about Maori culture and customs. The little bit Nigel mentioned was awesome. And I do find it very sad that Christianity, again, has infiltrated a culture and ruined some ideals that would theoretically be considered Christian, like acceptance." And I said, "Maori culture and traditions will be explored, most likely with Nigel. I'll continue to talk a bit about general history, government structures and such, but the discussion of larger cultural issues should be left mostly to the tangata whenua, with me adding only my feelings and impressions." Tangata whenua literally means people of the land, and it means the native peoples, the Maori people. And it's a cultural choice that I'm making. It's not like anybody's ever said to me, you mustn't talk about such things. But I just personally feel that it's right and proper for the people whose culture it is to talk about it, rather than me talking about it and explaining it. I mean, as I say, I'll add my perspectives and my impressions and whatnot, but that's different from explaining it in the first place, if you know what I mean. It's like I wouldn't want a New Zealander to explain America to an Australian, for instance. It just, it, it's not right because it's not their country. I mean, they can talk about history, they can talk about objective facts, they can even offer their opinion if they want. But to try to explain and interpret American culture to another country by New Zealand, it would be wrong. And I think it would be wrong for me to try to explain and interpret Maori culture when I'm not Maori. And that's really all there is to it. It's not any PC thing. It's not anything other than that. It's a personal choice that I've made. Having said that, however, there is one thing. Dee brings up the Christians, which, of course, Nigel had mentioned about how the Christian missionaries had changed a lot of things for Maori, including acceptance of gay people. And, I mean, Christian missionaries have a lot to answer for throughout the world. Whether they're Protestant or Catholic doesn't really matter. They've done a lot of mischief. In some places, they've possibly done some good things here and there, but a lot of the bad things they've done have outweighed the good things. But Maori culture is heavily wrapped up with Christianity in particular, and a lot of the rituals and whatnot have a very strong religious overtone, sometimes an overtly Christian overtone. And sometimes it does make me feel a bit uncomfortable, since I don't share that viewpoint. However, you know, when in someone's house, you do as they want you to do. And so that's just the way it is. So Dee goes on, "Oh, and I never felt a desire to have kids either. For a long time, I was convinced I would die early because I could never imagine being married or having kids. Now that I'm married, I still can't imagine the kids bit, mostly because I don't like children and never learned how to talk to them, but also we are quite selfish right now and want to spend our money traveling." And I said, "I think having children is a personal choice, and I respect people's right to make the choice even when I disagree with it, like 15-year-old kids having kids, for example." They said, "Interesting you raised the selfish thing. I think too often people have kids for selfish reasons. And I think that that's true. Sometimes you see people and they're having kids only for vanity reasons, because they want to see a reflection of themselves, or they have this desire to mold the child into something they want to make it, as if that was even possible. And those sorts of things. It's not all the time. There's some people who do it for other reasons. There's some people who feel compelled to have children. There's some people who feel societal pressure, all those sorts of things as well. And there's some people who don't plan it, as we know. But I do think that there are some people who have children for purely selfish reasons. And unfortunately, I think that very often it's the children who miss out in those cases. So when some parents will talk about childless people as being selfish, and that's why they don't have children, that may be true for some childless people. But it's also true that some parents have children because they are selfish as well. So it's sort of a double-edged sword, you could say. Anyway, T goes on, "Darren misses the crispy bacon from the U.S. as well. I don't. I like my bacon squishy and giant like they have here. I really miss a proper southern biscuit, though, and corn dogs." And I said, "Kiwis at least have a vague idea of what corn dogs are like, because their version of a hot dog is a sausage on a stick, dipped in flour batter and deep-fried. Not for me, but it makes it easier for me to convey what a corn dog is. Southern biscuits, well, I suppose you could make your own, though that's a bit too much work for me." Yeah, there's nothing even... Well, the only thing that's even remotely close to a southern biscuit is a scone. And sometimes they'll be rolled out like a southern biscuit is, but they are different. They're not... they're a bit heavier, I'd say, than a southern biscuit is, but maybe that's just me. She goes on, "As for the Parliament topic, just because it's banned in the U.S. does not mean it's a good standard to live by. Our freedom of speech is long gone in the U.S., and that is just one shining example. If they don't want to look like asses on the camera, then they should hold their shit together while at work. It's not like Congress is in session all that often. We left the U.S. because freedoms were disappearing. Would hate to see that happen here." And what she's talking about is there was a proposal to ban the use of images filmed in Parliament for purposes of ridicule and whatnot of members of Parliament. And that's been widely derided. The TV channels have also said they're going to ignore it and all this sort of stuff. So I said, "I agree completely. However, I'm not sure that the members of Parliament meant it the way it eventually came out. I think they were sincere, but not thinking very clearly. You're quite right, though. The best way to avoid looking like an idiot is to avoid acting like one." And that's really the bottom line. I mean, if the members of Parliament are so concerned about their image in front of the public, maybe they should act more responsibly, and then they wouldn't have to worry about it in the first place. But as it happens, that's completely dead in the water. There's no way that anybody's going to go along with any restrictions on the use of the images or banning the filming or what have you, because it's inherently anti-democratic, which would make it ironic for a democratic institution to try to be doing that. So I think that's pretty much dead. But this now this is going on to episode 28, which was about language primarily. And Spikey said, "You keep having interesting topics. Thanks. A question I think you got a while back, and one that I've gotten from several friends in the U.S., I've been in New Zealand 4 months now, relates to comparisons of Maori Pākehā situation and the U.S. racial miasma." I always thought that word should be pronounced miasma, because miasma sounds like you're saying my asthma. But I digress. Anyway, from what I can tell, it's such a different situation that the language used to describe it in the U.S. doesn't even work. Maybe you can explain from an American perspective. Thanks. And I said, "I think you're right. It is very different here. The level of institutionalized racism just isn't as evident, which isn't to say that there aren't problems or work to be done, but it's nothing like the U.S. or Australia. There are both historic and cultural reasons for that, and New Zealand has particular reasons, like the Treaty of Waitangi, for moving forward in a more bicultural way. I have to compliment you on the macaron in the word Maori in your comment. I admit I'm pretty lazy about using it myself, but that's all it is, laziness." And I talked about macaron, which is that little line over vowels, to indicate a longer stress in that episode. And if you want to see what I'm talking about, go to my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, and click on the comments for that episode, and you'll see it in Spikey's comment and also in my reply, because I copied and pasted. It's not a terribly easy thing to do, to put a macron over a vowel. You have to do keyboard combinations. The Maori Language Commission has a keyboard description, or whatever they call it, for Windows that you can download, so you can change it so that you can use the brackets keys with vowels to change them to macrons. But I haven't done that myself. I probably should at some stage, because there might be times when it would come in handy. But I just haven't. And as I said, it's just laziness on my part. But to larger issues there, there is racism in New Zealand, as there is in pretty much every Western country, I suspect. But it is very different here than it was in America, at least the America I left, and I don't think it's changed very much. There is not necessarily a permanent underclass as such. There certainly are always poor people, and brown people in general, which is Maori, Pacific Islanders, and other Polynesians, whatnot. They figure at the wrong end of all the statistics: health, crime, poverty, all those sorts of things. But that doesn't mean that they're locked into that either, because there are plenty of very high-achieving people from all races, and there aren't any automatic barriers to them. The main barrier to success in New Zealand is education, or maybe the lack of it, I should say. And that's a continuing problem, particularly in more rural communities, but also in some of the poorer enclaves of, say, South Auckland, for instance, where maybe they're not as well served as they should be educationally, and culturally, in the sense of the society, that the subgrouping of society that they live in, perhaps it's not as supportive as education as it could be. Having said that, however, they don't face the automatic barrier to success and achievement that, say, an African American would in the United States. There is as I've said before, there's a long history of intermarriage and interreaction in New Zealand between the races. And that goes all the way back to the Treaty of Waitangi in 1840. The purpose of the treaty was essentially to establish British control over New Zealand, because they were afraid the French were about to do that. But the British, there was no way that they could subdue New Zealand by force, by invasion. So they had no alternative but to use a treaty to try to negotiate with the indigenous population, unlike, say, Australia, or even the Americas, where they used force. And that sort of set up a context where there was a partnership between the government, which is usually called the Crown, and Maori people. And as that developed over time, that developed into a very strong bicultural framework, because of the two cultures. There's the Maori culture, and then there's the, well, it's generally called Pākehā culture, which means non-Maori, essentially, and largely British, although these days not so much. And that was the track that New Zealand developed under for the entire 19th century, basically, and into the well into the 20th century. But as more groups entered New Zealand, especially Pacific Islanders, but also people from other countries in Europe, from Asia, and other places in the world, there was sort of a multicultural society that grew up around that bicultural arrangement. So the bicultural arrangement is still intact, found based on the Treaty of Waitangi, and it has expanded to include all of these other peoples, these new immigrants, these people who are not part of the original partnership between the Crown and Maori. And so that's really what I meant when I talked in the beginning about a bicultural nation within a multicultural society. And there's no reason why that can't work. I mean, for the most part, it does work in New Zealand. But when I talk about the historic nature of New Zealand's racial situation, that it didn't have the segregation and the Jim Crow laws and the apartheid and other things from other countries, I actually ran across an example that pretty well sums up what it was like in the past. And this is from New Zealand History Online. And I'm just going to read two paragraphs on it. It's the whole article is called Americans and Maori, U.S. Forces in New Zealand. And as I said, I'm just reading two paragraphs of it. In 1942, New Zealand was far from having the best race relations in the world, but there was a wide acceptance of relaxed social intercourse between Maori and Pākehā people in public. Some of the Americans had different traditions. A number came from Texas and other southern states where Jim Crow laws still kept niggers apart in their place. They did not feel comfortable drinking and eating in the company of Maori, and a considerable number of the fights involving American servicemen appear to have been with Maori men, especially soldiers. In addition, there was reported trouble involving Maori women being regarded as fair game. An ugly situation might have developed, but strenuous efforts were made to build bridges. The most extensive of these involved Princess Tapuia and the King Movement at Narawahia in the Waikato. Towards the end of 1942, after reports of unpleasant incidents, Tapuia decided to approach the Americans and, despite some initial misgivings, Tapuia, described as this black woman, was kept waiting outside the commandant's office in Manurewa. There was an agreement that groups of Americans should come to Tarangawaewae Marae to meet Maori people and learn something of their culture. Groups of officers traveled to the Waikato on three occasions between November 1942 and February 1943. The meetings were a great success. The officers had carefully learnt the expression Tanakwe, and the Kuya replied by grasping their hands and calling Haere mai Americana, which basically means welcome Americans. A couple things I want to explain there. I mentioned Princess Tapuia. There is a segment in Māoridom that's called the King Movement, which has its origins in the 19th century, where they decided that if they had their own king, that it could help unite them and give them a stronger position in dealing with the British crown. It still exists today, and the home marae of the King Movement is at Narawahia in the Waikato, and the marae is called Tarangawaewae, which also means standing place, by the way. So the place where you belong. Tanakwe is a greeting, and you say that essentially to one person. So the American officers would have been saying to the Kuya, who's like the female, the main female of the marae. She calls the people onto the marae and so on. So when they would say Tanakwe, they're greeting her, and it would have been reciprocated by her saying, Haere mai Americana, welcome Americans. But the point of my reading that is that it's a story that you often hear about the difficulty that some American troops had when they would go into a pub and they would see Maori men there drinking alongside white men and having a grand old time. Because in their home states, that was impossible. It was illegal in many American states for so-called black people to be treated equally with white people. But in New Zealand, that was far more common. It was probably more common than not at that time. And of course now, there are, obviously aren't those distinctions. In my comment, I had mentioned how the situation is nothing like the U.S. or Australia. And I've talked a bit about the fact that it wasn't like the U.S. It didn't have racial segregation laws and so on. In Australia, the Aboriginals were treated under the Flora and Fauna Act until relatively recent times. And the recent actions of the Australian government to send federal police and troops onto Aboriginal lands to deal with sexual and physical abuse and alcoholism and whatnot, it's absolutely unthinkable that sort of thing would happen here. partly because arguably the problems aren't as severe as they are in parts of Australia. But that doesn't mean that there aren't similar problems with people in the lower classes here, which, by the way, includes white people, as it does in Australia. But it is absolutely unthinkable that central government would send in the police or the troops to deal with these issues on Maori land. It just could not happen here. I can imagine how in the U.S. they could use federal troops or police and whatnot to invade African-American neighborhoods to put down some sort of crime or whatever. I can imagine that happening because it has happened, admittedly, mostly in response to riots. But I could see how politicians would be tempted to do that, particularly as a vote-getting measure. And it may not entirely be unsuccessful if they did. But as I say, that sort of thing is unimaginable here. It's just, I can't see any scenario in which that could happen. It's as simple as that. So I hope that that gives some idea of how the racial situation in New Zealand is quite different from how it is in America or Australia or places like that. It's by no means perfect. There are far too many Maori and Polynesians and so on who are in the wrong end of the wrong statistics and so on. And there are things that need to be done about that. And the Crown needs to live up to its obligations that it made to Maori in 1840 as well as since then. And it needs to redress some of the wrongs that it did over the time, particularly in the 19th century. Some of those wrongs still haven't been addressed. But in general, the situation in New Zealand is pretty bright and pretty hopeful. And you can see that even in things like Maori Language Week, where this week all of the TV presenters were beginning their broadcasts in Maori. And there was a time when that would have been absolutely unthinkable. And not so much because anyone was opposed to it, but just because they never would have considered it, if you know what I mean. It wasn't, in many cases, some people it probably was racism, but for the majority of people, it was probably just an error of omission rather than commission. In other words, they weren't actively racist, they just weren't actively not racist, if that makes any sense. I hope it does. Because I find New Zealand to be an incredibly open and accepting society of people of different races, of different cultures, of different sexualities. I personally haven't experienced much in the way of racism or ethnocentrism. I have heard workmates and so on say things that are at best culturally insensitive and at worst perhaps racist. Most of that is directed against Asians, who are the most visible and most recent of the newcomers. And you see the same thing in America, where the most hated minority right now is probably Mexicans, because they're the most recent and most visible minority. The difference is that in New Zealand, they complain about the way they drive, and they complain about their numbers and they're using their language and things. But in America, it tends to be more about some perceived unfair advantage that Mexicans are thought to have over American-born Americans, which, of course, includes many people of Hispanic origin, it must be said. And I don't really want to get into a discussion of America's treatment of Hispanic peoples, because that's not what I'm about, and I'm not there, and I get told off more often than not if I dare to bring the subject up. So it's best that I just leave that, I think, or at least for now. That's all I wanted to say about this whole subject. And if you have any specific questions about anything that I've said, by all means, leave me a comment at amerins.blogspot.com or send an email to me at amerins@yahoo.com. Now, Tuesday's episode is going to be a special episode. I'm going to be having a chat with a listener, someone who hasn't been on any podcast before, as far as I know. And I'm going to be posting that on Tuesday. And I hope to be doing more of these in the future, and mostly on Tuesdays, which was actually my original plan, was to do something different on Tuesdays and keep the Friday podcast talking about New Zealand and culture and things that I've seen and so on. But we'll see how it goes. This is the first, and we'll see if I can't have more on Tuesdays in future. But in the meantime, do leave me a comment on my blog, amerins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amerins@yahoo.com. And that's it for this Friday edition. I will be back on Tuesday. Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye. My home is not a heartache. Sweet to surrender to you only. I said my